Good day. It is Monday, April 29th, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas. The KUAF website giveaway is offering tickets to three of the area's largest concert festivals. You could win tickets to Rocklahoma, Wakarusa, or the country music festival, Thunder on the Mountain. Separate registration for each concert giveaway is required. Details and registration available on the web at KUAF.com. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Support for KUAF comes from the Arkansas Fiber Arts Spring Extravaganza this weekend, May 4th and 5th, in the Lodge at Mount Magazine. This public lecture and retreat will feature Stephanie Pearl McPhee, also known as the Yarn Harlot. Tickets and more information available at arfiberartsextravaganza.com. Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, behavioral health coverage under the new University of Arkansas Health Plan, mental health explored through musical theater, and running for Alzheimer's. But first, the state has a few more dollars to work with in the coming year's budget approved at the end of this year's legislative session. Lawmakers wrote increases in education and Medicaid funding into the budget and approved several new tax cuts, including cuts to the state's income and capital gains taxes. Governor Mike Beebe used his radio address this week to say the cuts might need to be revisited in future years.
The new budget includes tax cuts paid for mostly with the savings we expect to see from the private option. I've shared my concerns about the risks some of these cuts in revenue will carry in future years, but those risks will have to be reassessed by a different governor and legislature 2 years from now. My formula to complete cuts to the sales tax on groceries also passed. It will bring additional relief to Arkansas families in future years as funds become available.
The governor's grocery tax cut is dependent on the state being released by federal courts from paying extra funds to school districts for desegregation efforts. Arkansas House Minority Leader Greg Letting, a Democrat from Fayetteville, says lawmakers managed to pull together by the end of the session and pass some major legislation. In an interview with Talk Business Arkansas, Letting said some of the partisanship at the beginning of the session did not stop progress.
I know that early on in the sessions, the first half was dominated largely by some of the reproductive rights and guns issues and things like that, and those got a lot of attention, but there was definitely a point midway through the session. I think it was the day the speaker even went around to make it clear to the committees he wanted to shift the tone, and I think we saw that, and I think the back half of the session, we did focus more on education, jobs, and obviously Medicaid.
Letting said the General Assembly was so evenly split that both sides had to ultimately listen to and work with each other in order to accomplish anything. Republicans held a 51-48 advantage over Democrats in the 100-member House, and Letting says Democrats have a good chance of taking back the chamber in 2014. This year, a little change may be coming to Fayetteville's apartment recycling program, but a grant application that would implement the change must first be approved by the City Council and then by the Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality. Brian Pugh, the city's waste reduction coordinator, says that the apartment recycling program currently serves five large apartment complexes in the city.
The participation hasn't been as good as what we had hoped. And so with this grant, we are hoping to purchase containers that we could give them, much like our residential program that has a 18-gallon bin that encourages recycling. And so if they have containers that they can utilize inside their units, they're much more likely to participate in our program. And that's our hopes, is to give them some more options for recycling and more education through having containers that they can have in their units and see every day and put their materials in to take out to the recycling containers outside.
In addition to the necessary city and state approval, the Boston Mountain Solid Waste District will be the authority through which the grant funding will flow to the city. The Waste District Board will discuss the grant along with other proposals for ADEQ grants at a meeting later this year. An event tonight will mark the one-month anniversary of the rupture of an oil pipeline in Mayflower. More than 200,000 gallons of raw crude was spilled in this residential neighborhood. Glenn Hooks is with the Sierra Club, one of several organizations taking part this evening.
Most prominently, we're marking the anniversary and seeing where things are in this 1 month after the ExxonMobil tar sand spill. Our number one priority is making sure that the people in Mayflower are taken care of, that their health and welfare are provided for, and that ExxonMobil makes them whole again.
The event will be held at Pierce Park next to Mayflower City Hall at 6 p.m. this evening. The Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality on Friday announced the winner of the 2013 Arkansas Environmental Stewardship Award. the Turner Bend store in Franklin County was selected as this year's winner. The store was chosen, in part, for efforts over the past 20 years by store owners Brad and Veen Wimberly to organize cleanup operations along the Mulberry River and surrounding areas near the store on Highway 23 near Ozark. The long-running tradition of adding names to the Senior Walk at the University of Arkansas continues. According to a release by the university, engraving names into the walk for the class of 2012 is expected to be complete by August. The more than 4,600 names will join the 140,000-plus names already engraved into more than 3 miles of concrete, representing graduating classes all the way back to the original class of 1876. According to the release, the normal cost for engraving each class ranges between $350,000 and $375,000. The Northwest Arkansas Naturals had a bitter weekend in Tulsa. The team dropped Friday's game 6-1 against the Drillers, though the Nats did come back and won Saturday's game 5-2. The luck didn't last as the Naturals lost yesterday's game in the bottom of the ninth inning with a final score of 4-3. The road series in Tulsa wraps up today. The Razorback baseball team won two of the weekend's three scheduled games. Friday evening, the Hogs defeated Georgia with a final score of 2-0. Saturday saw the Hogs win over the Bulldogs 2-1. The series closer yesterday was canceled due to inclement weather in Athens. The Razorbacks' win of the weekend series makes it the first time the team has won five of its first seven Southeastern Conference series since 2009. The Diamond Hogs return to Baum Stadium tomorrow when they face Missouri State. Forecast calls for clear skies tonight with overnight lows in the mid to upper 50s. Tomorrow will be another sunny spring day with highs from 80 in northwest Arkansas to 84 in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with lows in the mid to upper 50s. This is Ozarks at Large, and it's Monday. We have our Arkansas Talk Business update from Roby Brock.
Arkansas's jobless rate was 7.2% in March, unchanged from February, and just slightly below the 7.3% in March 2012. March marks 50 consecutive months that Arkansas's jobless rate has been at or above 7%. March also continued a trend in which the jobless rate improved, but declines in the size of the workforce and number of employed point to ongoing weakness in Arkansas's economy. Officials with Walmart and the Walmart Foundation announced that the company and foundation have given more than $1 billion in cash and in-kind contributions during the most recent fiscal year. Walmart said it's the first time Walmart or any U.S. retailer has achieved that level of giving. Walmart said the increase in giving was boosted by in-kind donations in the U.S. to food banks and to families suffering through disasters. Arkansas was one of the top beneficiaries of the giving, with the total from Walmart and the foundation reaching $72.8 million, second only to the state of Texas. PAM Transportation reported a first quarter net loss of $456,000 compared to a $674,000 profit in last year's comparable first quarter. Revenues topped $99.9 million for the Taneytown-based trucking company. PAM President Daniel Cushman said the company was focused on driver retention and improving payoffs from fuel efficiency efforts in order to reduce expenses. El Dorado-based Deltic Timber reported first quarter profits of $6.7 million, a huge jump from a $97,000 profit 1 year ago. Deltic's manufacturing segment reported operating income of $11.3 million, an increase of $9.7 million, from the previous year as the lumber market continued to show some steady improvement. Three bridges spanning the Arkansas River across downtown Little Rock and North Little Rock will be illuminated by year's end thanks to a $2.4 million gift from Entergy Arkansas and an assorted group of businesses and governmental entities. The announcement was made earlier in the week by Entergy Arkansas President Hugh McDonald and Little Rock Mayor Mark Stodola. McDonald said the gift is part of a celebration of the electric company's 100th anniversary in Arkansas. Arkansas lawmakers adjourned after approving a massive $4.9 billion spending bill and $170 million in surplus funds. The Revenue Stabilization Act, which lays out the state's spending priorities, was approved. It included increases for public education, Medicaid, and salaries for state employees. Legislators also approved a $125 million bond package for incentives for a $1.1 billion steel mill super project to be located in Osceola, Arkansas. Lawmakers also passed more than 1,500 laws, including $120 million in tax cuts, and they referred three proposed constitutional amendments for the 2014 general election. I'm Roby Brock, and that is your Talk Business Arkansas update.
Support for TalkBusiness.net on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the United States. Online, MitchellWilliamsLaw.com. The University of Arkansas system this year changed health insurance plans. Cost savings were cited as the main reason. But as Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, behavioral health care providers who serve the U of A population are encountering barriers under the new plan.
The University of Arkansas system maintains a self-funded health plan for 35,000 lives across 11 universities and colleges, as well as six educational units. The UA contracts with the third-party administrator, or TPA, to process claims and provide administrative services that used to be QualChoice, hired in 1995. January 1st, the UA changed over to United Medical Resources, UMR, after considered review by a select group of stakeholders and advice from an expert consultant. Cost savings to the UA, access to national networks, and top-notch management tools were cited as a reason for the shift, but behavioral health care providers who serve the UA community claim UMR is discriminating against them. At a meeting with concerned faculty mid-March, UA System President Dr. Donald Bobbitt conceded there may be a problem.
They have good contracts with the hospitals and with the providers in this state, most of whom we were already using. I think the overlap was 99%. The exception being in mental health services.
University of Arkansas Fayetteville microbiology professor Dr. Tim Krall is president of the Faculty Senate.
Well, the first question is how will things be different? And we were told that they weren't going to be different at all. And then we had a rude awakening with this mental health care provider issue. It turns out that our new healthcare system, UMR, was not reimbursing the mental health care providers at anything close to what QualChoice was. And the numbers that I heard were roughly 50%.
Dr. Krall first caught wind of the problem last January from colleagues who were in treatment.
But we found out that a lot of the mental health care providers had not signed on. The university, our campus, had a temporary solution of ensuring people who were using the mental health care providers that they would continue to reimburse them at the previous rate through June 30th until everything was straightened out. But my understanding is things are not getting straightened out right now. My most recent information is that UMR made offers to some of the mental health care providers that most of them have turned down.
But psychotherapist William Sim says he's tried to make a go of it. His clinic is located on Center Street, just west of the town square in Fayetteville. He treats adults struggling with depression and anxiety, among other things. And many of his clients are from the UA community.
And what you're seeing is a constriction of reimbursement to the providers. They're wanting us to provide the same services for less amounts of money. So each administrative group that's come in here is basically cut fee reimbursement. So my contract with QualChoice was about, I'm going to say, 75% of my normal fee, and I agreed to it because I like the population. UMR has come in, and they are now offering reimbursement at the tune of about 40%.
To manage reduced reimbursement, UMR told Sims to cut therapy sessions from 1 hour to 45 minutes, a suggestion, he said, that is not ethical. Although he's had no qualms with UMR agents he's encountered on the phone, he believes the reduced reimbursement is a means to frustrate and discourage providers from signing up. Fewer providers, fewer claims, less work for UMR, he said. Sims' office manager, Candy Simmons, is responsible for filing insurance claims, a complex process to begin with, made even more so by UMR, she said.
Well, just getting hold of a live person is difficult. I mean, I have to call and enter all the patient information, then wait for a fax, and they give me a passcode, and then I call back with that passcode, and then I give that information again to someone on the phone who transfers me to somebody else, and I give that information again to somebody over the phone, and then we get down to, you know, what my issue is.
UMR's third-party administrative interface with providers is described as state-of-the-art, but Simmons says the automation can be unbearable and time-consuming. She's also just completed what typically is a two-month enrollment process onto UMR's network. It was initiated last September. But beyond all that, psychotherapist William Sims hopes the reimbursement rates will be investigated. And he's also been communicating with colleagues in the field about the UMR situation.
Oh, yes. I mean, basically, we've actually, there is a fairly widespread response to this from the mental health community. I mean, there's a kind of a underlying unionization of this among mental health professionals to actually refuse to participate. And there's basically a talk of boycotting the entire system as a way of getting the administration to look at this. There is some speculation that this may be in violation of federal regulations. You're not allowed to actually compensate less for mental health than you are for any other medical services. It's a fair pay law.
Last month, a class action lawsuit was filed in U.S. District Court in New York City against UnitedHealth, the parent company of UMR, reportedly for alleged violations of parity laws, which mandate that reimbursement for mental health claims be equitable to medical claims. According to its website, UnitedHealth net earnings from operations of the publicly traded company in 2012 were listed at $9.3 billion. Back at the University of Arkansas system in 2012, it expended $177 million on health care, with a $4 million loss as of June 30th, 2012 fiscal year. The deficit was made up from reserves, and that is the primary reason, says Ann Kemp, vice president of administration for the University of Arkansas system. An RFP was issued, a request for proposals from new health plan third-party administrators.
Let's see, I believe we had five responses to the RFP. We looked at a number of things. We looked at the TPA's ability to service an account of our size. We looked at the admin fees that they quoted. We looked at the extensiveness of their network access, their care management opportunities for our members. There were just a number of factors that we looked at. But the primary motivation in issuing that RFP was to hold down premium cost increases.
Ann Kemp says approximately 9,000 individuals are currently enrolled in the UA Fayetteville Campus Health Plan. And of those, 300 sought mental health care. The network for mental health providers is operated by Optum Behavioral Health, a subsidiary of United Healthcare. 99% of medical providers serving the UA system under the previous plan have opted into UMR. And although Ann Kemp could not provide a percentage on behavioral health providers, she says UMR has done a good job enrolling an adequate number.
And we have 57 master's level clinicians and 9 psychiatrists and 21 psychologists. I'm not sure that's a network deficit. Now, I do think we still have some work to do in the area of psychiatrists, and I've asked them to continue those efforts, which they're doing. At that level of network staffing, I believe 81% of our UA Fayetteville members who sought mental health services last year will now be in network with their provider.
It's only Northwest Arkansas therapists that appear to have an issue with UMR, Ann Kemp said. But she had not heard the allegations that UMR had directed therapists to reduce appointment duration time to meet lower reimbursement levels. As a self-funded health plan provider, the UA assumes all liability and risk in exchange for increased control over the plan's administration and funding levels. The UA sets things like in-network and out-of-network levels, copay and co-insurance levels, deductibles and out-of-pocket max. But Ann Kemp says UA has no dealings with compensatory schedules, which fall under confidentiality agreements between providers and carriers.
No, we don't. We don't get involved in the provider reimbursement contracts at all.
So that places the battle for equitable premium reimbursement squarely in the hands of disenfranchised psychologists and counselors in Northwest Arkansas. As for employee premium rates, a perennial question, Ann Kemp said the UA system, which pays UMR a per enrollee fee, did not have to raise rates this year. But next year, that's a different story. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
An examination of mental health is at the core of the musical Next to Normal, the current production from Theater Squared. There are still more than a dozen performances left, including a special performance Wednesday night, hosted by the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences Psychiatric Research Institute. Recently, cast member Rita Harvey and director Amy Hertzberg came by the Carver Center for Public Radio to talk to Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums.
The Tony Award-winning and Pulitzer Prize-winning musical Next to Normal examines bipolar disorder and a family's attempt to take care of itself when faced with crisis. It's been called the future of musicals. With 2 weeks left in the run, I asked Rita Harvey, who plays Diana, and Amy Hertzberg, the director of this production of Next to Normal, about their thoughts midway through the theater run. We'll hear from Rita first.
What changes is it always kind of deepens, and you find new things as you go. And what I've loved this last weekend is that I felt like there wasn't the same show twice. I feel like I found new things every time, which was so exciting and scary and exciting at the same time, you know, exhilarating. That's what I feel. I feel like it just gets deeper every time.
Amy, you have seen this through rehearsal. You've seen opening night. You've seen other productions. What is it like for you seeing it again?
I think it's always in process for everyone as it's deepening for the actors. I'm also able to view things. But the number one thing that allows me to view things differently is the fact that we have these audiences, and which is so wonderful. And I've always said that the audiences for our theater are the best, most generous, lovely, lovely people who want to be a part of this theater experience. And so actually you learn a lot through having the audiences. We have, you know, one preview before we officially open, and every audience is different, though. Also, they all have their own personalities, and sort of seeing the way, and that's the joy of theater, that a new piece lives every single performance. It's just one of the great joys, but of course it also makes you think.
The community, based on the reviews that I have seen through Twitter and Facebook, have embraced this production. I mean, that's not unusual for a Theater Squared production, but these songs really seem to be striking people.
Can I also add these actors?
Yes.
Because the cast is amazing. They are the dream cast. And to take the tiniest bit of credit for that, as the person who cast them, I was really interested in people in their auditions, in finding the hearts that we would desperately want to follow in this story, and to find the actors who related to the material in that way and who were extraordinarily giving. Because I think it takes a lot of, you know, courage for an actor to truly live in the place in their heart in front of us that this piece is asking. And that was my great goal. And for every single person that is in the show, they have brought that. They have brought this real piece of themselves and what they really care about that matches up with what their character cares about. And I think that is making, you know, one of the things that people are responding to so enormously.
You have to be the characters in Next to Normal are somewhat, on occasion, more than somewhat vulnerable. I mean, there are vulnerabilities on display.
Very vulnerable, yes.
And so for you to say that this cast has brought what they need to bring, that takes a lot of work.
It takes a lot of work and a lot of trust. And thank God we extremely trust Amy and we trust each other. And we've talked about it a lot, that we've built such incredible relationships together and such trust, because you're just bearing your soul. And if you didn't trust that, you know, the people around you were going to be, hold you and, you know, and really respond to that and be careful with that, and then, you know, it'd be harder to do. But we all really do trust each other, and we all care so much, and it shows, and it you know, we've fallen in love with each other, all of us. So we really love doing this, as painful as it can be, some of these places that we live, horribly painful, but it's become kind of cathartic, and you find that that it's good to share this story with the audience because it can be cathartic to them.
Rita Harvey is Diana in the Theater Squared production of Next to Normal. That run continues through May 12th. While inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio, Rita sang one of the numbers from Next to Normal, a song expressing the sadness and frustration that can be associated with trying to deal with bipolar disorder. The song is titled, I Miss the Mountains.
There was a time when I flew higher, was a time the wild girl running free would be me. Now I see her feel the fire, now I know she needs me there to share. I'm nowhere. All these blank and tranquil years, seems they've dried up all my tears. And while she runs free and fast, seems my wild days are past. But I miss the mountains, I miss the dizzy heights, all the manic magic days and the dark depressing nights. I miss the mountains, the highs and lows, all the climbing, all the falling, all the while the wild wind blows, stinging you with snow and soaking you with rain. I miss the mountains, I miss the pain. Mountains make you crazy. Here it's safe and sound. My mind is somewhere hazy. My feet are on the ground. Everything is balanced here and on an even keel. Everything is perfect. Nothing's real. Nothing's real. Where the air is clear and cuts you like a knife. I miss the mountains. I miss the mountains. I miss my life. I miss life.
Rita Harvey singing I Miss the Mountains from the musical Next to Normal inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio at KUAF. The Theater Squared production of Next to Normal resumes Wednesday night with a special performance hosted by the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences Psychiatric Research Institute. For more information about that performance, you can look for the link at today's edition of OzarksAtLarge.com. Additional performances of Next to Normal run through Sunday, May 12th. You can also find out more at our website. Accompanying Rita for her performance inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio, by the way, on the Mary Baker Rumsey Steinway piano, was Amy Herzberg, the production's director. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
Every day on PT, we travel around the world of classical music. We feature highlights from concert performances, recordings not available on CD, not available on YouTube. In fact, the only place you can hear them is on our show. We'll go from a big, beautiful concert hall in Amsterdam to a rustic retreat in the hills of Vermont on Monday's Performance Today from 8 p.m.
Performance Today, this evening at 8 o'clock here on KUAF 91.3 FM. If you want to raise awareness about an issue, you can do so in a number of ways. You can host a panel discussion to help educate the general public. Or you can organize a gala whose proceeds benefit the cause of your choice. If you're Jack Fussell, you literally run across the country. Earlier this year, Jack set out on a mission to raise money and awareness for Alzheimer's disease. Jack's goal is to raise $250,000 by the time he reaches his final destination in Monterey, California this fall. His cross-country trek led him through northwest Arkansas last week. While Jack was in town, he spoke to Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda inside Studio 123 about his journey. He began the conversation by discussing how he came up with the idea to run coast to coast for a cause.
Well, I had three major running goals for a few years, and I got through the last one, and two or three days later, I found myself kind of feeling down. Been the first time in 6 years I didn't have a goal. So I started praying and thinking about it, and about two or three nights later, about 9 o'clock at night, I stood up off of my couch, and I said, I'm going to run across the country. And it felt good because I felt strong again. I started smiling, and I started calling people on the phone to tell them to give me accountability. And the second person I called said, what are you going to do it for? And I just said, Alzheimer's, because my dad died with it, and so did six of his brothers and sisters. So it was born that night, and I've never looked back. And I started January the 12th in Savannah, Georgia, on the ocean.
Are you originally from Savannah, Georgia?
Nope. I'm from North Georgia, about 60 miles north of Atlanta in a place called Talking Rock.
So why did you decide to start in Savannah?
I was also a volunteer for 12 years with the Department of Natural Resources over there. And they asked me if I would please start at a state park. So I went down and found Skidaway Island State Park down there, and I started there.
Okay. Yeah. Now, you said you had a lot of running goals. Have you always been a runner, or is that?
No, ma'am. I started running pretty heavy about 6 years ago. 12 years ago, I weighed around 270 pounds, and I weighed between 240 and 270 for about 25 years.
Wow.
And I had a bleeding ulcer and almost died with that. And at first, they gave me 2 hours to live, and then they told me I probably had a year to live. So I come out of there and started doing all the right things with my diet and aerobics and lightweights, and I lost 100 pounds in 11 months. And like right now, I weigh about 155. So I did it to try and stay alive, and, you know, fear was my motivator.
Why running? What do you like about running? Because you've continued to do that.
I don't know. It really feels good to me. I run, I walk, I jog, ever what I, you know, need to do during the day, because I push a jogging stroller that's got about 70 pounds in it. So and the running part, I don't know, I've probably never felt as good in my life as when I run. I really do enjoy running. And the 7 months prior to this thing, I ran an average of between 125 and 150 miles every week.
Oh, wow.
Up and down the mountains in North Georgia.
Wow.
And that felt great. Really did.
Okay. So I know your stroller is your companion, has a name?
Mm-hmm. Wilson, from the movie Castaways.
That's what I wondered.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. My son's a missionary in Europe, mm-hmm. and he can't be a part of this. So I put on Facebook one day that I needed a name, and I decided whatever name he gave it would be the name, and he gave it Wilson. Within about 5 minutes, he come back with that reply.
Oh, that's an excellent decision.
Yeah,
I like
it. Yeah,
it's
pretty cool.
Now, you said it's about 70 pounds. What do you have in your cart?
I've got a bunch of dehydrated food in there. I keep a bunch of water, water filters, sleeping bag, a small tent, all my winter clothing, stuff like that. Stuff to make me self-sufficient because I do not have anybody doing this with me. There's no chase car or anything with me. I'm by myself.
So when you decided you were going to do this, how long did it take you to sort of figure out the logistics? I mean, you know, of making sure you had enough things with you to get where you're going?
I was telling them this morning, I sit down for 2 days and had post-it notes laying all over my house and legal pads. And I stood up and went over and gathered every bit of it up and threw it in the garbage. And I honestly said to myself, I'm going to go with the knowledge I got now. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this. I'll get out there with the stroller. When problems present themselves, I'll pull off the road, so to speak, figure out what I need, get it, get back on the road, and start running again. And I've done that, and it took away so many worries. And then I realized I wish I'd have done my whole life that way. Instead of worrying about things that never happen or trying to figure out things, let life happen to me and me deal with it at that moment instead of spending so much of my life trying to make sure this works out and that works out. And you never can do that because people die. You know, I mean, you do all that stuff, and then one day you have a heart attack and die, and everything you planned all them years for is gone. So there's some great teachers out there if we'll listen to them. Just life.
It's interesting that you're kind of running across to help teach others, you know, specifically about Alzheimer's, but it's great that you're being able to learn stuff along the way as well.
Oh, I learn every day from everybody. My goodness, I sure do. And I found out, like with Alzheimer's, I have anywhere from 5 to 15 people every day stop beside the road to tell me their Alzheimer's story. And something that really shocked me is I found out most of them have never heard of the Alzheimer's Association, where they can go and get free help. All kinds of help available to them, and most of them have never heard of it. So I've been telling all of them, you know, telling the number to call, mm-hmm. giving them bracelets, giving them cards. And then the other thing I'm hoping I'm doing is that people like you are helping me do is get the word Alzheimer's out there day after day after day. So maybe the government, which is the ones who come up with most of the grants, will come up with more grants for researchers to be able to do research and find a cure.
Now, when you were planning your route out, how did you decide where you were going to stop? Were you deciding to only stop at places that had an Alzheimer's Association presence?
Mm-hmm. If I'd have went straight across, I would have done about 2,800 miles. Mm-hmm. I'm doing probably around 33, and it's because I'm zigzagging to Alzheimer's Association offices.
Okay.
32 of them. I'm going to 32 places.
Okay. And so when you have these places, do you have places to stay? Like, did they put you up somewhere, or do you just mostly camp, or how does that work for you?
No, when I did leave, I told everybody I'd probably be spending 90% of my time in my tent. I've spent one night in it because people pick me up and take me to motels. They take me to their home. The Alzheimer's Association has been calling nursing homes, assisted living homes, and they let me stay there. They've been calling, and people donate motel rooms to me. And that's been a really cool thing because I've enjoyed getting people involved with other people. Not only do they feel, maybe they sometimes they feel a burden, golly, we've got to find a place for this guy tonight.
Mm-hmm.
But then when they make that phone call, they're meeting a new person and they're saying, I'm with the Alzheimer's Association. I want to find Jack a place to stay. And that person's saying, ha, I never heard of you, or I'm glad to know you now. We'll do something together someday. So it's just been fantastic. I felt like a burden at first. I no longer feel like a burden at all.
Oh, that's great.
I feel like I'm providing kind of a service of meeting people that are going to help each other.
Now, you're familiar with the disease because of your family.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you mentioned that a lot of people that you've spoken to weren't necessarily familiar with the Alzheimer's Association. Uh-huh. Were you the same way before
mm-hmm. yeah.
you encountered it with your family?
Never knew anything about him the whole time my dad had it. Never knew the first thing about it. Sure didn't.
So you found out about him after your dad passed away?
Yeah. I only found out about him really, I guess, the night that I decided I was going to run for Alzheimer's. And when I told the second person on the phone I'm going to do it to raise awareness mm-hmm. and money for Alzheimer's, I didn't know Alzheimer's what.
Mm-hmm.
The next day I looked in the phone book and looked around on the web and I found the Alzheimer's Association.
Mm-hmm.
And I called them, and they said, come on down to Atlanta, and I went down and sitting with them, and it was a wonderful experience for me.
What services do they provide that you learned about when you spoke to them?
One of the biggest things I found is their support groups, where people can go sit around a table that all are dealing with it, caretakers, you know, unpaid caretakers, mm-hmm. and they can sit there and talk to each other about what's going on, and they get to feel a part of something. And sometimes they get answers. They go, wow, I didn't know that could be done. But one of the biggest things I think that comes out of it, it's just my own opinion, is they get to get it out of them. Mm-hmm. You know, and you know, like a guy saying in one support group I went to, my wife asked me for a divorce about every 10 minutes some days. And then 2 hours later, she says she don't know anything about it. And so the other people on the other side of the table said, that happens to me too. And my wife even hit me, or my husband hit me. And they start to feel a camaraderie, and then they can get help. You know, they can get counseling if they need it. Just stuff like that, that's just tremendous. They can get referrals to other services that they help with. And it's a big thing. And then part of the money goes to research. And I was able in Little Rock, I spent 3 days with Dr. Barker. And he is a research scientist. He's the head of his unit, and he's a guy who actually takes the microscopes and splits the stuff and slices cells and, you know, does the experiments trying to find a cure. And to me, it was such an honor to be at the University of Arkansas Medical School and see that equipment and see those people that are so dedicated to trying to find a cure.
When you talk to people, do they ever ask what your experience with Alzheimer's has been? Did they ever ask you specifically, like, did your dad do this, or, you know, is this a familiar situation for you, or what can I expect with my mom, something like that, anything like that?
They usually don't. They honestly don't. They just stop me and start telling me about their Alzheimer's situation. And I think I've found that a lot of them just need somebody to listen. They don't want somebody to, you know, sometimes some of them have told me they try to talk it over with their other loved ones, maybe their husband mm-hmm. or something, because it was the mother. And they don't want to talk about it. Let's move on. And they were never able to get it out of them. And they come out there with me, and they see an old guy running down the road, and, you know, it looks like a grandpa or whatever, and they'll start talking and crying. And I've had them talk to me up to an hour before. And, I listen. And I know how to listen. I can do that pretty well.
I know not everything's entirely planned, but do you have a date for when you plan to be finished, when you plan to be in Monterey and done?
I think it'll probably be late September, mm-hmm. but if things happen along the way that make it go quicker, that's okay. If it makes it go slower, that's okay.
Sure.
I've explained to my children that, I'm doing this for a purpose. No time, date, stamp on it at all.
I know you keep talking about, you know, what you want other people to get out of this, and you want to help educate them and stuff. What do you want to get out of this?
I don't know. I don't know if I know of anything, because I've got a guy I'm journaling to mm-hmm. every night, and I got another gentleman that's wrote a bunch of books that said he'd like to write a book. And that even bothered me at first, so I told everybody I knew that if they did write a book, any money that's made from it at all, the first penny, every bit of it will go to the Alzheimer's Association. So what I want out of it, that might sometimes change day to day, but I can't hardly ever think of anything that I want from it other than to somebody to get some help. And I've been lucky enough to have about 5 people that have gotten back in touch with me and said, you gave me the 800 number. I've gotten in touch with them. They're helping me. And thank you. So I know for sure I've helped 5 people. And I know we've raised some money, so I know that money has had to help somebody. Mm-hmm. So I've done good. I've done what I wanted, for sure.
Now, when you get to that final destination and you wrap up everything that you have planned in late September, how are you planning to get back home? You're not going to run it back, are you?
Nope. I've been thinking seriously lately about maybe buying a car out there mm-hmm. and driving back and in my car visit every place I visited on the run. And it won't take me nearly as long.
It won't take you nearly
sure
as
won't.
Long.
Yeah. I would even come here if I do it, but I'd come to every place that I had kind of an official type visit.
Well, we'd love to have you back and have you check in and let us know how it went.
Yeah, I will do that.
Well, I thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much for your time.
Jack Fussell spoke to Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda last week about his cross-country journey to raise money and awareness for Alzheimer's disease. You can keep up with Jack's progress by visiting AcrossTheLand2013.com. For more information about Alzheimer's disease, visit alz.org. This is Ozarks at Large.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs. Grace Brim of Bisco became known as a vocalist, drummer, and harmonica player in the male-dominated field of blues music in the mid-20th century, billed as the Queen of Harmonica. She was born Grace Millard in Bisco in southeastern Prairie County in July 1923 or 1924, sources vary. The Arkansasian met her life partner and longtime musical partner in Gary, Indiana in 1945, bluesman John Brim of Hopkinsville, Kentucky. Grace and John Brim married in 1947 and gigged around Gary and beyond. They recorded with pianist Big Maceo Merriweather for Fortune Records of Detroit, Michigan in 1950 with Grace on vocals. The next year, Grace and John each had a release on Random Records of Chicago, Illinois.
I beg my baby, I just stop a drinking way. I beg my baby, Lord, just stop a drinking way. Boy, she gonna keep on drinking till she drive me far away.
Grace and John Brim are heard here, billed as John Brim and his trio from 1952 with pianist Sonny Land Slim. Grace Brim also recorded with her husband as John Brim and his Gary Kings, John Brim Trio, and John Brim and his Stompers, named for John's song, The Gary Stomp. They recorded as the John Brim Trio for J.O.B. Records of Chicago, which billed Grace as Queen of the Harmonica. She also appeared as Mrs. John Brim. The Prairie County native recorded with Snooky Pryor, Eddie Taylor, Jimmy Reed, and fellow Arkansasian Roosevelt Sykes, among others.
God, he'll never do that no more. Sometimes a bag needs something to keep you cool. Ah, now sometimes a bag needs something to keep you cool. Better look out now, though. Dave's got something for you. Tell you what it is.
Based in Gary, Indiana, the Brims had 9 children. Grace increasingly left the spotlight to her husband, John. The couple last appeared together on a single in the 1970s.
See, now all my flavors are guaranteed to satisfy. Hold on a second, baby. I gotta put my banana Dixie cups, all flavors and push-ups too. I'm your ice cream man, baby. Stop me when I'm passing by.
Grace and John Brim got an unexpected boost in the late 1970s when John's song Ice Cream Man appeared on Van Halen's album debut. The 1978 rock album has since sold millions of copies in the U.S. alone. While Grace played on her husband's original version of the song, it was deemed too risque for release at the time. Grace Brim died in 1999 in Gary, Indiana. Here in its entirety is Arkansasian Grace Brim of Bisco, born Grace Millard in Prairie County, with Man Around My Door from 1952.
shine bright everywhere.
Arkansas, your Grace Brim of Biscoe in Prairie County with Man Around My Door from 1952. It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansas Songs.
Arkansas Songs is a production of KUAR and Experiment Station Studios. Associate producer is Keith Merks. For more information, go to arkansongs.org. Arkansas Songs, since 1999.
And this is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Bentonville, Fort Smith, and Harrison. Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle. KUAF is supported by Northwest Arkansas Media, publishers of Northwest Arkansas Times, Springdale and Rogers Morning News, Benton County Daily Record, and the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. These daily newspapers offer local, state, national, and international news, plus business and Razorback news. NWAOnline.com for more information. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Christina Thomas. Kyle Cullums and Antoinette Grajeda will be back tomorrow for an all-new edition of Ozarks. Thank you so much for listening, and have a good Monday.